Good afternoon. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels, President of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and Distinguished Lecturer Emeritus from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this October 11th Indigenous Peoples Day edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the Pacifica Network, in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right, the York College community, student, faculty, staff, all of them who want to be are connected by way of ycradio.org. That is the York College Internet Radio Show. Well, today we hope to have you be the program, Ashley. We're going to ask you to be policy advisors. We're going to have a conversation with our audience, so you can get ready right now. Calling numbers 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. I'm raising the question, really, of our audience being policy advisors. Every now and then I'd like to do that. And I'd like to do that by asking you, what would you do on certain critical questions? For example, what should U.S. immigration policy look like? Number two, how to solve the crisis of mass shootings and gun violence. I mean, my God, I mean, it's just, it's awful, it's painful, it's traumatic, traumatizing. Does Biden need a black agenda? And finally, but not least, can the orange man, I call him the orange man, no capitalization of the man either, can the orange man's quest for white minority rule be stopped? But before we discuss these topics, I want to begin by talking about Indigenous Peoples Day. I am so delighted that we have Indigenous Peoples Day. By the struggle, by the organizing, the mass protest of Indigenous people and their allies, really going back to the commemoration of the so-called Columbus's journey to this country many decades ago. There was a study push to change the whole notion of Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. And I am delighted that President Joe Biden is the first American president to actually recognize Indigenous Peoples Day. He's actually speaking out about it. He is actually speaking affirmatively about it. That's a good thing. Do we need to do more? Should he do more? He should. But it is a reflection of the people's movement that the President of the United States is now affirming this day as Indigenous Peoples Day. Now, there are people who get offended. Some of the people in the Italian-American community get offended because the Columbus Day was seen as almost like an Italian-American holiday. But this is not in any way intended to be offensive to Italian-Americans. It had to do with the nature of what Columbus's voyage to the so-called New World meant. And one of the best authorities for this is Howard Zinn in his People's History of the United States. Oh, what a wonderful book this is. You want to get real history? Go to Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States. And in the very first couple of pages, he begins his real story of American history and her story, mostly history, by talking about, and I paraphrase him, the arrival of one Christopher Columbus off the shores of Haiti. As the indigenous people looked and saw the ships, and they went out to welcome this strange looking person, at least strange because they didn't look like him. He did not look like they looked. He was obviously different. He was a white man. He was a European. They were indigenous people of, it could have been the Taina, it could have been the Carib, it could have been the Arawaks. I won't speculate on that. I mean, it was one of those indigenous groups. But they went out with open arms to welcome these strangers on the assumption that they were kind people like they were kind people. And you welcome strangers to your space and place. But as Howard Zinn records, Christopher Columbus wrote in his diary, Gee, how handsome these people are. How kind and gentle they seem to be. He basically said, with X numbers of people, I'm going to say with 50 people, we could conquer them and make them our servants. What an incredible clash of worldviews. Here are the indigenous people coming out to welcome Christopher Columbus on the basis of a human being, irrespective of how he looked different. Didn't matter. Human being to human being. And yet here comes Christopher Columbus coming with a different worldview as Europe is beginning to emerge and beginning to look outward from its dark ages, coming with a perspective of conquest of people and nature, a clash of ideologies, or not ideology, a clash of worldviews that would lead to the vicious enslavement of hundreds of thousands of indigenous people and the ultimate genocide of millions in this hemisphere. It had also opened the door, of course, as the indigenous people were, and some of them, many, many succumbed to these foreign diseases that their systems were not used to. Pandemic on steroids, in many respects, chickenpox and all kinds of foreign diseases. It opened the door then to African enslavement. Had nothing to do with perceptions of the inferiority of African people. It had to do with the whole need for free labor. For free labor to build out the commercial economic development of Europe, Spain. And then there was the scramble by all of the major European powers, England and France and all of them, carving up, wanting a piece of this new hemisphere, new to them, where Native people were wiped out. And then the land was exploited, this new land of riches of crops and minerals and all kinds of things that, quite frankly, Europeans were, I mean, they were really not that well developed in many respects. And so there was a need for these new commodities. And therefore, enslavement ensues, and eventually colonization ensues, the subjugation, brutal, genocidal dispossession of Native people, and of course, the enslavement of Africans, the rape of Africa, importation of Africans to convert these new territories into prosperous places for the development, not of Africa, not of African people, not for the indigenous people, but for the European colonizers. Hence, it is important to note that when the 15 nations of CARICOM gathered in 2013, I think it is, even though they are still in a somewhat neo-colonial dependent state on the former colonial powers, they said, enough is enough. Irrespective of political persuasion, political ideology, these 15 nations of the Caribbean came together, the prime ministers, the heads of state, to demand reparations for Native genocide. That was the first thing they said. Native genocide, which is a principal position rooted in my art. It's not just about me. It's about we, us, and our. We recognize the slaughter. We recognize the genocidal dispossession of our sisters and brothers who are indigenous. And reparations are due for that, as well as African enslavement. And so the CARICOM Reparations Commission even now is pressing that demand for reparations for, in fact, what happened with Christopher Columbus's voyage to the so-called New World. And that's why it's important to have this day to study. And that's why it's important to understand this day in terms of the quest for reparations and healing and the creation of new, more responsive societies throughout this hemisphere beginning in the United States and throughout the Central and South America. So just wanted to start with that. And others who want to call and comment on that can do so at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. The professor's on the soapbox today. And then on the soapbox today, we are opening up the phones for you to comment on these topics. If you want to comment on something else, I wouldn't necessarily disallow it, but I have four topics, really five, because if you want to comment on Indigenous Peoples Day, you certainly can, and what that means in terms of maybe some of these issues. The first one is, what should U.S. immigration policy look like? Given the fact that this nation is based on the dispossession of Native people, and indeed the ripoff of territory from people from Mexico, Latinos from Mexico, or so-called Hispanic people. You know, we had a big controversy today in terms of what happened to Haitians as they were being whipped, or the appearance of being whipped and chased down with horses. But the larger question is, what should be the immigration policy? There is this whole notion of Ellis Island and the whole notion of America being open. Give me your tired, your poor, the people who are yearning to be free. Does that apply to every people? Does that apply to black people and brown people and yellow people and red people or not? And what does that really mean? What should the policy be? Because there's a lot of debate, going on now within the Biden administration about what to do about immigration policy. You are the policy expert. Call us at 212-209-2877. What should the policy be? I understand there's something somewhere in the neighborhood of about 12 million, I think, and I stand to be corrected, undocumented, which is the appropriate term. We have long since stopped using terms like alien and I don't know what the other terms even used to be, in respect for the fact that these are human beings. But 12 million, should there be a path to citizenship? What does that mean in terms of those who've already been in line waiting to go through the regular process? Are there tensions about that? Are there contradictions about that? And how do we deal with the fact that there's the perception that immigration is kind of like seen as like a Latino issue or quote unquote Hispanic issue, you know, like, but there are a lot of black people. There are people of African descent on that border. They're not the majority. They're a relatively small percentage. But what about black dreamers? What about people of African descent? And how does that fit in terms of having a non-discriminatory immigration policy in these United States of America? 212-209-2877. You are the policy experts. That is to say, the audience of WBAI are the policy experts making recommendations on these critical questions. Second up, how do we solve the crisis of mass shootings and gun violence in this society? I mean, my goodness, there were 5 school shootings last week. I mean, what is going on? It is said that an abusive society produces abusive people. Is that what's going on? I mean, how is it that students could plot to kill their fellow students? What is going on? Why is that so? And what must we do to cure that problem, to deal with that problem? Because it's painful. It's traumatic. It is frightening. People are afraid to take their kids to school. It cannot become normalized. This cannot be something that we just begin to accept. Oh, well, you know, somebody may pull out a gun and start shooting at school. What's driving students crazy? Because this is crazy. But I want to say it in a demonizing way, in the sense that there is a reason for it. And how do we deal with that? 212-209-2877, professor on the soapbox, dealing with a range of issues. The other question is, does Biden need a black agenda? We're talking about the COVID packages that were relief packages. We're talking about the infrastructure bill. We're talking about the bipartisan bill. Some voices are saying, yeah, we hear that, but where are we as black people in that conversation? Latinos may be asking the same question. Asians may be asking the same question. Is it too colorblind? Do we need to hear some specificity in terms of racial remedies, in terms of those things that are afflicting and affecting black people? Does Biden need a black agenda? And finally, 212-209-2877. There is, I think if you look at everything, and I hope, I write them, it's becoming ho-hum. I saw someone from, I got to track this down, a professor from one of the universities in the city, and she was talking about Mussolini. People used to like rhetorically just throw the word fascism around. This is like creeping fascism for real. The orange man and his mega minions are actually trying to establish white minority rule in this country, where you're marching on ballot boxes, and I advocate that we do, and I think we can actually overwhelm this strategy at the end of the day, but we better wake up, because they're trying to make the elections null and void. I mean, the fact that there are millions, millions, millions of people who believe this, who believe these fake news, the alternative facts. We are facing the potential for fascism in the United States of America. How do we stop? Can we stop the orange man's machinations? Can we, in fact, rescue democracy? And if so, what does that look like? 212-209-2877. The professor on the soapbox, our audience all hour long. We begin with our first caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hi there.
How are you?
Okay. I'm fine, thank you. This is Elle from Long Island. And I'd like to just make a few comments in regards to Columbus.
Yes.
Christopher Columbus. I would say, and if I may so, I believe it's Dr. Gerald Horn.
Yes.
Dr. Greg Carr.
Yes.
Professor Hunter.
Karen Hunter's show on Sirius XM.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, Karen Hunter is on Sirius XM.
Right. Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, I could go on. And there are two books by Horace Greene, When Rocks Cry Out. And there was a doctor that was presented on WBAI over, let's see, his book came out, was scheduled to come out in 2018. And I believe he was on BAI in 2017. And the book that he wrote, he is the first. I don't know, it may be that he is the only. And that's Dr. David H. Imhotep, who is the first ancient historian, African historian. And he wrote a book called The First Americans Were Africans,
mm-hmm.
in 2011. His second book, which came out in 2018, was The First Americans Were Africans Revisited. I've said all of that just to say this. Oh, and just one more thing. On Sunday morning at 5 a.m., WBAI had a gentleman, I believe it's Jamie Lee, and he was speaking of something that it woke me up totally. One World Tartarian, I believe. You may be familiar with this, and you can expand on it, because what he said in that presentation at 5 a.m. on Sunday morning, I hope BAI replays it, was astonishing.
Hmm.
But let's go back to Dr. David H. Imhotep, who stated, Africans have been in America for 5,600 years plus. Now, if we also look at the four documentaries made called, The Color, Hidden Colors, 1, 2, 3, and 4. There may even be a fifth one out. We will know that Africans have been all over the world.
Yeah, well, actually, John G. Jackson is one of the John G. Jackson is perhaps the authoritative figure who has laid out the fact that out of Africa come all of humankind, spreading from Africa throughout India, China, throughout the whole world, for that matter. So, yes, that is a documentable, demonstrable premise. Van Sertima, Ivan Van Sertima, wrote the book. They came before Columbus and whatnot. So, yes, we obviously need. This is an important part of the studying that we need to do. But the fundamental premise is that all of humankind comes out of Africa. So if you go to India, the Dravidians, who are at the so-called the people, the Dalits and the people at the bottom, were black people. In China, Wei Valley, black people. So black people migrated out of Africa throughout the entirety of the world, and indeed there was a sort of the morphing and changing of human beings as a result of that. But we all come out of Africa, and certainly the premise that Africans were in this hemisphere thousands and thousands of years before Columbus is a plausible and demonstrable proposition. However, key question that we're talking about today.
But I want to address that.
Yeah, but we need to address other people too, because we've been on quite a while. The proposition we're addressing today is simply to talk about particularly the brutal dispossession of indigenous people and the onslaught, therefore, of enslavement, and why that is why reparations is due. All of the other stuff is valuable. All the books that you have referenced are certainly important, and we take that as we duly note that, and we want other people to contribute as well. So we appreciate so much you calling and always making very thoughtful contributions to our conversations. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Let's go to our next caller. We want to get lots of callers in, by the way, so that means, you know, a minute or two or three is max. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Thank you, Professor Daniels. Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York. Hope you're doing well.
Doing fine.
I was just listening to a gentleman who does geopolitics, and he was talking about the situation in Mali and that whole part of Africa, and how there was an outreach to the Russian government for assistance, and how America reacted to the outreach. So you might want to devote some time into broadening the spectrum. With regard to the challenges that you were talking about, without mental health and without after mental health, people realizing that they need to move away from monopoly capitalism, most of this discussion is going to go in the proverbial circle. I believe that, could you quote me the statistics from the census? Because my understanding was that this population in the United States is still 66% of European descent. Is that correct?
I'm not exactly sure that. I would not want to go out on the limb on that. What I do know is that the European population is declining, and there is the notion that by the middle of this century, it will no longer be a white majority country. It will be a majority people of color country based on just the flow of immigration and and whatever. So, and that is one of the things that is driving some of the hatred, some of the fear of the browning of America, as often talked about, because unfortunately, once Native people were brutally dispossessed and we were enslaved, it was clear that the founders of this country meant for it to be, and others have carried on the notion that it would be a white man's land. And this permeates and infects the system, all of the systems within a society. And this is the nature of structural institutional racism and white superiority. So there is this fear. And it's openly talked about sometimes in terms of our civilization and preserving our people and preserving our race. And some of these white nationalist groups, the Proud Boys and some of them openly talk about, white power in order to preserve the white race and white values and so forth. So we're in a very dangerous period.
And so once again, the point about mental health in, what was it, 2017 with Charlotte, it was interesting that the phrase was the Jews will not replace us. And yet it's challenging to get some of our the more conservative Jewish power in this country to even allow other people to speak freely, let alone do anything. And that's that, until you are able to bring both history and sanity to the American population, look what happened after the Civil War. You had, when things were quote-unquote more equal, and it took federal troops to do that, what was the outcome under the economic system?
Well, the ultimate, I mean, but then the continuing parties, obviously, what you had really was the sellout of black people and the establishment of white minority rule, I mean, states' rights and the South and the long protracted struggle that is continuing about not only the nature of the political economy, but of course you're right. Ultimately, I don't disagree with you. We need to fundamentally address the issue of the nature of the American political economy.
My point was is that when you do what it is that the American establishment says that it wants, which is a fair and free economic system, when the white population begins to lose, they then resort to the gun violence.
Right.
And once again, since in most communities in which there is maximum gun violence and we pay all this money for police protection, they're unable to keep the guns out of the community. I mean, yes, there are taking personal responsibility, and that's where the mental health comes in. But there are no, in Brooklyn, where an 11-year-old shot, a 14-year-old? How does that go down when you spend $6 billion in policing?
Right. So give me your prescription, because where you're the policy advisor, you're saying broadly we have to get rid of monopoly capitalism. That's a nice broad stroke. But you also seem to be suggesting that it's very important that history be taught. What else would you prescribe?
Mental health.
Mental health and history.
People will not listen to history unless you get them mentally healthy where they feel out of threat.
Right.
Whether a person is actually threatened or not, if the person perceives a threat, they will then act on it. And if you look at the history of European Americans in this continent, they will strike with maximum force when they're afraid.
Right. All right. Appreciate your compliment, your contribution. Again, this is the professor on the soapbox. We're talking on what should U.S. immigration policy look like, how to solve the crisis of mass shootings and gun violence. Does Biden need a black agenda? Can the orange man's quest for white minority rule be stopped, which I translate into his quest for fascism? Can it be stopped? And of course, we also talked about this day and what it means. Our first caller was very, very helpful in giving us a range of resources to remind everyone that out of Africa come all of humankind. And certainly within this hemisphere, African people have been here for eons and eons and eons. And we need to learn that history as well. And that should be taught and talked about on Indigenous Peoples Day as well. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Let's continue the conversation. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello. I'm on the air.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Thank you for acknowledging the Indigenous Peoples Day for the people that were here originally. But we should also give them credit for, if you want to give them credit, for the Constitution. That was put together by those European people who came in contact with the Iroquois people.
The Iroquois Confederation.
Up in New York. And they had this confederation that they had set up that the so-called, that the European people came in contact and actually copied from their constitution. So it was the Native people that put this together for them. Well, right. They copied it.
Right. And by the way, they copied it, and it's important for you to, and it is, like you said, the Iroquois Confederation. And they copied it and did not give credit for it. So what else is new? You know what I mean? There's this history of things being stolen and claimed as if it belongs to Europeans. You know, whether it's music, whether it's art, whatever, that often happens. And that is a kind of dishonesty which permeates U.S. history. And that's why having a day like Indigenous Peoples Day becomes important. And as the previous caller said, you know, really teaching real history becomes important, because only by teaching real history can we purge people of all of us, including we get infected by the same misinformation. That's why Carter G. Woodson talked about the miseducation of the Negro. We are miseducated, but also Europeans and others are miseducated. We need a curriculum of inclusion, as Dr. Shango Blake, I'm going to have him on my show in the next couple of weeks, is talking about in New York. All of a sudden, city council has embraced the idea of a curriculum of inclusion, which would tell the real history. Look, appreciate your call. Others can call at 212-209-2877. Want to get as many callers in as possible. 212-209-2877. The professor on the soapbox, talking about what should U.S. immigration policy look like, how to solve the crisis of gun violence and mass shootings that are hurting and so painful. Does Biden need a black agenda? We gave him credit, by the way, for at least acknowledging, the first American president to do so, Indigenous Peoples Day. And can the orange man, who's out there, you know, we just had a big rally out in Iowa, where his approval ratings in Iowa is 66%. Approval rating in Iowa, right? I mean, come on. This is befuddling. But it's not befuddling. It's dangerous. Because there is, we used to call it back in the day, creeping fascism. He's on a mission. And he has millions of people following him who believe in fake news and his version of things. And when you have that, we're in real dangerous territory. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Nope, not yet.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, folks, y'all line up, and we got open lines here. You can call right now, and you don't have to wait. 212-209-2877. Again, we are delighted to have our show on Indigenous Peoples Day and to have opened with a commentary about it. And, of course, we're very pleased to also have callers, at least our first caller particularly, to also continue to remind us and give us resources to help broaden our knowledge. But we do want to make you the policy expert. Policy experts to contribute to the conversation, to give your ideas about what should be done on a series of vital topics. I've selected them. You can change if you like, but I've talked about the what should immigration policy look like. We talk about it. There's a lot of discussion about it. But if you were crafting immigration policy for these United States of America, what would it look like? Give us a call at 212-209-2877. How to solve the crisis of mass shootings and gun violence. Our previous caller said we must have mental health and history. Mental health and history. How is it that high school students can take the life of another high school student, or for that matter, anyone? The other thing I note is, you know, and maybe it's just because I'm from the black community, and there was a time, and perhaps we hope still a time, where we respected our elders. We have people going around just busting old people upside the head at random, just knocking the hell out of somebody and laughing and running. Ha, 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 ha. Our grandmothers, our grandparents? How does that happen? I mean, there's a level of insanity here that is frightening, but we got to figure out how to cure it. Does Biden need a black agenda? And can the orange man be stopped in terms of the establishment of white minority rule? These voter suppression laws, all of this stuff to elect MAGA minions as secretaries of state, and all that. I mean, this is all designed to, if he runs again and says, change the results, he'll have his MAGA minions in place to do that. Let's go back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. Aloha. Greetings to the beloved community. Huna, H-U-N-A, healing. When you use the term the orange man, you're doing the same thing that he does. It's an odd hominin attack. And what the issue is, and the problem is...
That's right, and I will do that. I have no respect for someone who has no respect. He is the orange man, and I call him the orange man because his destructiveness, his utter disregard for human beings is such that he's not, I don't want to give him, I don't like to say his name. I don't even like to say 45. Sometimes I use Spike Lee's language, Agent Orange, and so that's why I do that. And that's why I'm not worried about whether or not I'm doing the same thing he's doing. I don't think it's equivalent. I think it's different because I would not denigrate people in the same way that he denigrates people. So look, appreciate your call. Others can call at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Okay. How are you? I've been listening to the show, and you're trying to figure out, A, how to stop the school shootings and the violence that's being perpetrated in this country. And I personally believe... In fact, I'm absolutely convinced that in order to get to the root of any problem or cure any problem, you have to first understand the root of it.
Right.
And what we need to understand, this country, is the fact that, see, every time something happens, we pretend as if we're so shocked and, this is so horrible. But the reality of the situation is that this country is not only born and bred in and of violence, but it completely moderned itself behind violence.
Mm-hmm.
This country more or less is modern after the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And so how sick is it that we're talking about an entire society and the way that people entertained themselves was by brutalizing one another, killing one, chopping each other's heads off, setting loose vicious animals on human beings. And this is what people considered entertainment. And so now we've modeled our government and our way of life and our society is modeled exactly behind that. And so we have things like karate and boxing. The human body is a beautiful thing. God created it and everything on earth to make sure that we flourish. And now we've created all these different methods to hurt one another and then call it art. Karate is an art. The ability to harm and hurt God's creation is art. See, this is the mentality in this society. So when these things happen, you know, people, they grieve over it, but it comes and it goes because people really don't understand the reality that we are born and bred in violence. And that is the problem. Now, not when I say we, I mean, unfortunately, you know, I'm not being racist, but, you know, Europeans, this is what Europeans did. You know, we did not live like this, you know, in Africa prior to coming here. You know, and the lady that was on a few callers before, she made a mention of, I didn't catch the name she used, but like as the foremost African scholar, and I would challenge her to learn about Dr. John Henry Clark, who is...
And she does. She's familiar. She's a very, very learned person. So she knows about Dr. John Henry Clark. She knows about Dr. Ben. She's mentioned Ivan Van Sertima and so forth. So she's a very, very, very learned woman, and she always contributes valuable ideas. But let me ask you this. I mean, you've established the premise about the nature of violence and where it comes from. So what would be your policy prescriptions? For example, would you therefore ban violent videos? Would you therefore say there should not be karate, there should not be jiu-jitsu? So what would you do from a policy perspective in order to change this?
Well, unfortunately, policy is ineffectual in a situation like this. In order for these things to change, the hearts and minds have to be changed. Because if you tell...
So how do we do that?
Do something. Well, that comes with education. And so education has to be used, it has to be designed in a way that not only educates, but systematically breaks down fear. See, because the biggest problem that we have with communicating with one another is our fear of the unknown. This is what causes most of the violence. you know, these things are behavioral and they're reactionary. We need to become proactive with regards to educating our children and changing the way we govern our society. Change the way television programming is set forth. Change what allows to take place on social media, you know, because you're not going to get rid of it. But
right.
Change the way the entire package is presented to the country. That is how we cure it.
Right. All right. Well, appreciate those ideas. And the question becomes, however, at some point, somebody has got to generate that. So that's a school. That's a group of people who have a study group. Someone once said, and dare I use another reference, a non-African reference, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. So are you someone who's like maybe having this conversation with some of your friends, your family, to maybe create a learning circle to begin to model this?
Going a little further than that, everything that I'm doing is specifically designed so that I can create a way to repackage this. And I intend to gain celebrity and then use that celebrity to forward it. Because
right.
I need the
Good.
Celebrities. I need
Good.
Celebrities to help me help educate the public to understand that these are not the people that we're supposed to look up to.
Right.
You know, we live in a society that will pay an athlete $100 million, but we have no concern or give no credence to doctors, scientists,
right.
educators, people who
right.
move the society forward. And as
right.
a result, we are suffering as a whole society.
Right.
You know? But, this has to come. Like, the best thing that ever happened was when Charles Barkley said that he wasn't a role model. But nobody was really listening.
Right.
Nobody was really listening.
Right. Well, appreciate that. And the thing I appreciate as much as anything in terms of you laying out the ideas is you are prepared to do something about it in terms of your actions because, you know, we often theorize about things, but how we live and then how we, in fact, work with others to try to change the situation is incredibly invaluable. So thank you much. Really appreciate it. Others can call at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. We're on the soapbox today. We have open lines. You can get in immediately if you call now. I'm enjoying this. Our audience is the experts for today giving us policy prescriptions and on these critical issues that face us. I think we need to have more conversations like this. What should immigration policy look like? It's a big issue. It really broke into the public eye. It does every now and then in relationship to what was going on with the Haitians and still is going on because they're still being deported back to Haiti, which is not a good thing. But it's also affecting people from Latin America as well and other people of African descent as well. And then, you know, in general, what should be done in terms of what I would call a just and non-discriminatory and humane immigration policy? Have some ideas. We work on it with something called a Pan-African Unity Dialogue, but we're always open to more ideas. And this crisis of gun violence, of senseless killings that are taking place, and violence. I mean, again, you know, elders, this man knocked upside the head and bum rushed on as they're walking up, and it's just ha 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 ha. There's a problem there. And our previous caller, you know, talks about the degree to which, you know, there's violence everywhere in American society. We know that this society is awash in guns. There are guns everywhere. And people tend to want to settle disputes with guns. Settling disputes by violence by any means is probably not a good thing. But when you're ready to use deadly force, that's an entirely different matter. And then does Biden need a black agenda? We put that out there. We had someone call who took objection to the fact that I call the orange man. I call him Agent Orange. I use it in a disparaging derisive way, because I mean to be derisive. However, I don't mean harm in the sense that I want anything to happen to this human being. I would not want him to be killed, assassinated, anything like that. But I want to see him for what he is, a despicable human being that is causing misery for many others and wants to translate it into white minority rule in a form of a kind of fascism and is attracting black men. Is attracting some people in of color to his proposition, which I also don't understand. But perhaps somebody can call me and explain why that's so. 212-209-2877. Let's see, do we have any callers on the line now? Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. I'm going to explain it all to you, brother.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead. Listening.
All right. Well, it's a lot going on, and the immigration is part of it.
Okay.
The immigration feeds into the gun violence, and I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
Even they said to Jesus and Mary before Jesus was born, there's no room at the end. There's no room in the end when we're talking about America. We need to slow down the immigration to a trickle. I don't care if they run a lottery system. I don't care how they do it. It doesn't even matter the color at all. Black, red, yellow, does not matter. That's the only time I have any agreement with Trump, and that's why you got black people going that way. And I'm going to tell you why. As I grew up, I have watched young blacks used to be able to work in the kitchens, cooks, chefs, construction, all of these entry-level jobs that do start making money. Construction workers make over $1,000 a week on the East Coast, in the West Coast, in the center, maybe not in the South. $1,000 a week. I met a friend who used to get in a lot of trouble, and I seen him. I said, hey, man, you still doing that? He said, no, I ain't doing that no more. I said, well, what you doing? He said, I'm working sanitation. He said, T, I bring home $900 a week. Why I'm a risk a good job to go out there and hustle? That's the bottom line. You ain't got no money, so you don't care. And a lot of these youngsters, they don't have no money. And the gangs is helping them get money. And that's what runs this country, and we know it. Money, M-O-N-E-Y. So why am I going to keep letting in people that are going to take the jobs from the people at the bottom, and they're going to take your job? And people don't want to say it, but it's the truth. I'm walking around Harlem, and I'm telling you right now, when I look in these construction sites, who do I see? I see white guys, and I see Spanish. I rarely see blacks anymore. They make it 900 plus a week, and you're not there. Where are you? You're not serving burgers. Where are you? You're in jail, and you're not in jail. Where are you? If you're not a lawyer, and we all ain't going to be lawyers, we all ain't going to have degrees, what happened to those trade jobs? I'll tell you what happened to them. The guy that just came across the border got it, and you don't. And no matter what, we're just like the lowest thing on the totem pole, any animal. We going to eat. And it doesn't matter how and who and where and why. It's going to happen. So when you don't allow people to get it the right way, they going to get it the wrong way. But they going to get it.
Right.
And that's where we are right now. So you want to take a gun out of my hand? Put a check in my hand.
Hey, brother.
Let me pay my bills.
Right.
Let me hold
Let me say something. Let me break in here a little bit, because it's interesting on many fronts. And first of all, let me just say I appreciate you, your candor in raising this issue, because immigration is something that is that really raises big questions inside of the black community. But sometimes it's not talked about a lot because people are fearful if they talk about it in certain ways, they'll be shut down or they'll be considered to be not humane and what so forth and so on. So I appreciate you raising it. And by the way, on that last point, it recalls a conversation. There's a group called, I forget the group, the group we work with in Washington, D.C., Concerned Black Men, great group, and they work with young people. And there were some shootings that went down in the community, and they reach out and they test the brothers. In this instance, mostly brothers, maybe a couple of sisters, but mostly brothers. And they said, well, what can we do? What can we do? And one brother said, hey, if you want us to stop the killing, he said, we'll exchange our guns for jobs, just like you said. We'll exchange our guns for jobs. So I'm glad you raised this point, because the issue of why some black men are attracted to Trump is you sort of laid that out in terms of why that's occurring. Now, I think that there's, I think, and by the way, in our discussion in the Pan-African Unity Dialogue, when I used the term non-discriminatory, I was being deliberate. I do think immigration policy is seen somewhat as a kumbaya exercise. We do not sit down and talk about what is our interest, what is the interest of Latinos, what is the interest of Asians, what is the interest of white people, and how do we work out an immigration policy that suits our interests. And when you talk about construction, this is something that really strikes a nerve because people can't quite understand what's going on in terms of people being unemployed. And yet you find, you know, very often, unfortunately, in New Orleans and various other places, you will find, you know, Latinos who get these jobs, who, by the way, many of whom are also being exploited by a system because they can't protest. They're not going to talk about their wages. But on the other hand, the wages they're making are wages that other people might be willing to actually step into and work on. So we really do need to have this conversation among ourselves, because at the end of the day, this system is really manipulating all of us. They don't care whether it's Latino or Asian or whatever, or white. They will play all of us off against each other in the name of profit. And so that's what we have to really work out. In that sense, while I agree with you, what I agree with you is about the candor of it all. I don't necessarily agree with all the outcomes. I do think immigration does contribute to the society, and it's been shown, and so forth and so on. But I definitely agree with you that if we're going to have immigration, we have to have it on the basis that makes sure that it's open to everybody and that it does not impact in a negative way those who are already here in terms of labor. And the way to do that is by having a systematic, we have to regularize it. We have to set the terms and conditions for immigration in a way that is inclusive, non-discriminatory, and make sure that everybody can ultimately benefit. Really, really appreciate your call, my brother. And please keep listening and please calling. Others can call. We got a couple more minutes to go. 212-20. Oh, maybe. Ooh, wow. We only got a minute. I can get one more caller. One more. 212-20. Well, then I can get another out. Do I have another caller? Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. I'm against immigration. If you force people to compete against low-wage workers, then you impoverish them. In New York City, it used to be that construction work was high-paid work. Now, one-third of the workers are low-wage immigrants, and it's not unusual for them to be making minimum wage without any benefits.
That's the exploitation system I was talking about. That means that those who are the profit motive is manipulating, and they will in fact use others. And but here's the problem: our anger will be.
You're not letting me talk.
Huh?
You're not letting me talk.
I know, because I'm almost done. I'm giving some analysis on. We can talk about this further, but because I know where you're going with it, I think. But the point is, I don't want our anger to be directed at those who.